Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. This is Ben Baker coming to you, and I am excited to have Carrie Ann Nadal from ODN Sure on my show today. Carrie Ann was gracious enough to have me on the golf course, her podcast. And we had an absolute phenomenal time. I brought a wedge. I brought a 7-iron, a driver, and a putter. We had a great time together. And you know what? We had so much fun. I had to bring her on my show because she is the power of ODN Sure. And we have to sit down and talk about this because what you do is incredible. You blow my mind. So welcome to the show, Carrie Ann. You guys are doing technological stuff that I just sit there going, you're going to have to speak at real high level because you're going to just lose me in about 3 minutes. So welcome to the show. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks for that awesome introduction. To fill in a couple blanks, I founded a company called ODN. The website is ODNSure, like SURE.com. So you can go check out more there. I think I'm building a brand that builds AI products for insurance that help contextualize exposures for all different lines of business, meaning where are you and what does that mean for the likelihood that you might be involved in a bad thing, like have a claim that you might want to file for your insurance. And it's a super technical subject, right? AI in and of itself, I think a lot of people go, oh no, oh no, oh no, statistics class in middle school, like, please don't make me do this anymore immediately, right? And so it's a really interesting subject to be able to talk to you about on this podcast and kind of share what we're learning about translating something that is very deeply technical and has that visceral sort of negative response in most people and how to turn that into a positive, how to structure a conversation that gets people interested, excited, and engaged about what you do. Definitely doesn't don't speak in words that are for college educated folks, but really simplify and elucidate. There's a very technical word. Of
course. That's a $10 word right there.
But really translate what is technical into things that are fun, relatable, and help people understand what you do on an intuitive level.
Right. So let's get into this because what you do is really massage big data at an enormous level. You know, I mean, if you look at your website, from what I understand is you guys are able to predict where car accidents could happen or where the bad locations are anywhere in the United States for the most part. So explain to me how this works. How did you get to this point? Like what brought you to sit there? Aha, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life.
The rest of my life. Yeah. Well, and hopefully I do this and I do many more really cool projects like this, but how it came to be, if we think about sort of how we drive around where we live, right? There's always a really unsafe road. One place that you know to just sit at the red light a little bit longer because you always see cars run through it. Or for me, there's a stop sign on Route 9 just south of Hartford on an on-ramp to a highway. And that intersection just bugs me because people expect the person in front of them to merge into 65 mile an hour traffic. They don't for whatever reason. And you just see a tremendous amount of fender benders there. Anybody who's sat in traffic congestion, and then the result of that congestion have been some sort of traffic crash at the end, whether it's a severe one that looks terrible and awful and you're saying prayers for their families, or whether one that's just like, everybody is sort of looking at while they drive by and slowing down traffic, right? We can all understand the experience of traffic crashes and we can all put together the reasons why they might happen, right? High speeds, narrow roads, I mentioned stop signs and merges, dangerous merges. We all intuitively know this is what causes crashes at this place. So we said, well, can we take data and a wealth of data, like brain busting amounts of data, and take what we know to be intuitively true and mathematically prove it to be true. And when you're talking about questions like, where are car crashes likely to happen, or where are claims associated to car crashes likely to happen? It feels like a human question. Like humans should be the only ones who are able to answer that question because it is so complex. But with the wealth of data that's being produced about roads today, being generated from city and state governments, first and foremost, who keep track of the roads, their condition, their physical characteristics, their traffic volume, to police departments who are collecting information about where traffic crashes happen. And then you start to layer on things like telemetry data, devices plugged into your car to track where you hard brake or speed, or devices that are in our traffic lights that are monitoring traffic volume or air quality. You start to realize very quickly how much information is out there. And we ask this question, is it enough data? Do we have enough experience and enough content to be able to get close to answering a question that to date only humans have really been able to guess at the answer to? And it turns out we do. Unfortunately, there are a lot of traffic crashes, hundreds of thousands of traffic crashes every year. Just to contextualize, about 40,000 people die every single year in a traffic crash. And they're awful. I mean, we shouldn't be accepting that level of risk on our roads. But for a statistician, that is really helpful because there are so many observations that we're able to model them. So with all of this data and advances in cloud computing that enable us to process that data very quickly and efficiently, and importantly for our company, affordably, we're able to generate these predictions that will only get better over time as more data is collected. In general, I think AI as an industry, let's talk about AI in general, is experiencing this transition from revolutions in the methodology itself. These are the pioneer statisticians who are creating literally new math and new techniques and new methodologies. Where we are now is this implementation phase, and where ODN really sits is in this implementation phase where we say, all right, the math is pretty well established, the data is there, the computing power is there. Now can we put it to work? Now can we start answering these questions? And this is just one of many that I think we're going to be able to answer and we're going to be able to use, particularly in my industry, which tends to focus on insurance or managing risk with commercial fleets and city governments and all those who are driving on the road. Can we use it to inform these really important questions about where can we keep people safer? Can we actually prevent crashes? Can we save lives? Can we reduce that 40,000 number to something that's much more tolerable and much less accepted, let's say, on a day-to-day basis? So it's really what drives me and where I think in terms of the movement of AI, we sit into this evolution that's a much bigger movement than just ODN.
Well, it sounds like you're at a nexus. For years and years, we've been collecting data. Everybody's been knowing that in a sophisticated way, some in paper and pen, but we've been always been collecting data. You know, we've always known that there's car crashes. We always know there's fatalities. We always know, you know, where the locations are, this sort of thing. But it's being able to take all that information, synergize it, amalgamate it, process it layer on layer on layer so people know that, oh, wait a second, it happens at 6 o'clock at dusk on rainy days when the sun is facing a certain location, that this becomes a certain situation. That's where the magic occurs, because too many people have all this data and they do nothing with it. And people collect data because they say, well, we need to fill up these hard drives. And I'm sitting there going, no, you don't need to collect data to fill up hard drives. You need to be able to make salient information out of it and be able to help people. So my question to you is, first of all, how do you amalgamate all this stuff? Because you're dealing with city government, state government, federal government, highways departments, weather department. I mean, God, I don't even know where to even start to be. Insurance companies. How do you get all this information together and get everybody to talk nice to each other just so you grab the information to be able to make sense out of it?
Love the question, because it's not easy. And I think a lot of folks who talk about doing data analytics or who are thinking about doing data science really don't give that part a lot of focus, right? How are you going to build the architecture so that you can do it once and you can do it nationwide? So for us, it's actually a fun little trick. And one of the things that differentiates our business in the market is that we think of things not by person. So I don't think, okay, Ben Baker, what's your age? Where do you live? How much money do you make? What's your financial history? Have you been in a crash? Right? I'm not collecting any information about you. What I want to know is where you are. And if I can know that you are sitting in your podcast studio on the first floor of a building on a residential, semi-commercial street where there aren't a lot of traffic crashes, right? If I can contextualize where you are, I can actually know a lot about you without actually asking you any questions or really knowing anything about you personally. So for us, we're all sick. Oh my goodness, it's fall and it's gotten us. But for us, I think that's the trick, is that we join everything on a map. We put a map out and we say, okay, here's where you are. What does it look like based on your environment? What risk exposures might you be exposed to? So at the core, we start with where you are and location as part of the way that we join the data. So instead of worrying about having an identifier for Ben Baker, whether that be your name, right? Ben Baker, there's no offense, probably a few Ben Bakers in the world.
I would hope there's more than one. Someone else I can blame. I mean, I hope there's another Ben Baker out there I can blame for everything. It's that Ben Baker, not this one.
Well, that's a really hard thing for, let's just focus on insurance carriers for a second. It's a really hard thing for insurance carriers to rectify because they may collect data about you, Ben Baker, but they may get the wrong Ben Baker, or more likely, they may look at Mrs. Baker and say, okay, I have information related to this address or this vehicle, but if Mrs. Baker takes your car to the store, now that car isn't associated to Ben Baker anymore, it's associated to Mrs. Baker, and they have a hard time knowing whether that data is valid for you and should be used to price your insurance, or if it's really your wife who's the bad driver, right? Whether she's the one getting in accidents using your car. So rectifying information to a person is actually a really, really hard task. And there are companies that try to do this, particularly in financial services, where loan servicing and fraud is a really important thing to be keeping track of an individual's experience. There are businesses that focus on just that exclusively, and even they do it probabilistically. So they don't have certainty that it's always the real Ben Baker, right? They're guessing and they're saying with 90% certainty, I'm sure that Ben Baker used his credit card here and this was the real Ben Baker. What we say is, well, that level of uncertainty, that difficult task of attaching and assigning data to you, forget about all of the expense and time and difficulty of collecting all this information about you. What if we only knew where you are? And by the way, you probably have already given away this information in 8 or 9 phone apps, right? If you opened up your iPhone and looked at where you've location enabled, you've probably given it to Google Maps, to Waze.
I've given it to everybody, you know?
Yeah,
every time I click on a website, it says, can we track who you are, where you are? I go, yeah, why not? Another person knows where I am. Okay, good. Come get me.
Exactly. It's the most important piece of information that everyone gives up, and they probably shouldn't, because it is infinitely powerful to associate data to you. If I know where you are, I can geospatially or use proximity to attach data to you. And Ben Baker just parked his car outside of a liquor store at 10 o'clock at night or a bar, didn't move his car for 2 hours, and then he got on the road and he was speeding. Well, is Ben Baker a good risk to be insuring? Maybe not. And I haven't collected any information to answer that question about you personally or from you. I just use where you are to answer that question.
Interesting. You're right, because it's being able to sit there and say, all right, we're able to track this person. We're assuming their habits. Whether I was in the bar having a glass of cup of coffee or 12 cocktails, you have no idea. But as an insurance company, you could make assumptions based on where my location was, how long I was there. That's fascinating, because it's the average, something that the average person would never think about.
Right. And most people think about data collection about them personally. And what the real trick of what we do is there's no personally identifiable information at all. I don't know who you are. You're a black spot to me. I just know that you're on the map. And where we apply it is in the auto space. So I've given you some examples, but how it works for auto is where you drive. So I'm tracking what roads do you drive on. And it turns out that knowing that you drive on unsafe roads helps determine whether you're going to be in a crash. It's kind of intuitive, right? If you are the safest driver in the world, but you're driving around in an area that has had a historical record of a lot of crashes, has high speeds or cars parked on the right-hand side or some combination of all of these things that we put together in a model to be able to control for all of these factors, that you might be involved in a crash no matter if you're the best driver in the world or not. Where this ultimately plays out, though, and I think the real magic of what we're doing, the real opportunity of what we're doing, and the really important future vision that I see for this technology. Yes, of course, it's really important to know Ben Baker drives on really unsafe roads. But where we see something magical is what happens when Ben Baker starts driving, doesn't have his hands on the wheel, okay? Now Ben Baker's in a car that's driving itself. Does any of the data associated to Ben Baker matter anymore? Your credit score really matter if the car is driving itself? Or does your hard braking and speeding really matter if you're not the one hard braking? So when we transition into semi-autonomy and full autonomy, which we can debate about when it's going to happen, but we can all agree that eventually,
like, hopefully after I stop driving, you know, I'll be happy with it.
Sure. I mean, there's arguments both ways. Some people say Absolutely. That it'll actually make it a lot safer. So you might want to be on the road in a fully autonomous environment. You're just not comfortable with it yet, right? It's still a cultural transition there. But when we get into that environment, now we have to think about what risks can we quantify, because crashes are still going to happen, but it's not going to be your fault anymore. It's going to be the vehicle's fault or something else's fault, something that affects you, something that you're exposed to. And that's the data that we provide. So the Tesla example of the Tesla that was on cruise control and did get in a crash and had a fatality was an awful circumstance, but ultimately was explained by a weird anomaly in the road infrastructure itself that the machine hadn't learned to navigate yet. It hit a median, it hit like a Jersey barrier. And so if we can pre-program some of those exposures and let the car know where it's unsafe to drive, now the car has greater awareness of the environmental risk. It can sensitize its sensors to account for some of that, be a little bit safer in some places, you know, have less or a faster reaction when it perceives outside exposures in areas where it knows it to be unsafe. There's a lot we can do to prepare for the autonomous future if we understand and have a baseline measure of what risks that car is going to be exposed to.
Okay. And I'm going to go back a little bit because all this is fascinating, but I'm not sure I quite got it. It says, because the data is, I'm a black hole. I'm a black box. I don't exist. You know, it's information. I'm a spot on the map. I'm part of an aggregate. Is it that much easier for you to get the data from the different data sources because you're not breaching my personal information? Okay, so that's what it is.
Yep, I don't need to know anything about you. I just need to know where you are. So as long as you've given me permission to know where you are, I can connect a world of data to you and measure all of your risk exposures.
So let's take that forward now, now that you've explained all that, to the Tesla examples, to road conditions. Do you get hired mostly by the insurance agencies, by the car manufacturers, by the cities and highways? Who would be the biggest user of your data, of the amalgamation of the data, to be able to sit there and say, oh, wait a second here. We've got problems here. Here's some different ways we can fix it. Whose ears are perking up when you're speaking is probably the best way of putting it.
Well, I hope your ears are perking up.
Absolutely. I can't write you $1 billion check or $100 million check.
Yeah, we accept all sorts of payments, credit cards, cash, check, however you want to pay. No, I joke. But you point out multiple markets, and our business strategy, we've defined a roadmap that starts with city and state governments, where we've sold 38 cities around the United States, currently deployed in Chicago and DC as a methodology to help the government best decide where to invest in traffic safety and Vision Zero initiatives. That was where we started. We have a roadmap that our next target is the insurance industry. We've been selling into insurance now for 2.5 years, going on 3 years. And with insurance carriers, they care about a few things. One, they care about engaging their customers and acquiring customers. So they want to provide this information to individuals like Ben Baker or fleet managers. So you think about the Ubers, the Lyfts, the Riders, even some major distributors like Anheuser-Busch that are on the road and have control over where their vehicles drive. They also want to be able to price based on that information. So it's important that the math works, that we're actually predicting where crashes are likely to happen. We'd hate to give you advice to avoid an intersection and put you on another road that was worse. So the math has got to work. And it's got to essentially be able to demonstrate to insurance carriers that they're going to lower the actual risk, save money, more accurately price people. So folks that are driving on really dangerous roads are going to be able to identify them and price them appropriately and make more money. It's got to be profitable to implement a new technology because there are costs. But after that, we have built partnerships with telemetry providers. These are the plug-in devices in your vehicle. The important thing about telemetry providers is they work across both insurance carriers and commercial fleets. So if you're a risk manager of a commercial fleet, you are using these devices to track where your cars are going, where they're driving, and in a way can benefit from more data from that telematics provider to contextualize not only how your drivers are driving, but where they're driving. So next step on our roadmap is to really capture a lot more of the telemetry industry by providing this additional value-added service to the data that they already provide to their customers. But we don't end there, right? This is a data business. This is a business that has the ability to capture many, many markets and be a very big business at the end of the day. So these are the ones that we've done in 3 years, but you can see direct applicability to going direct to fleets, direct to autonomous vehicle manufacturers, and in general, auto manufacturers. Auto manufacturers like Tesla are increasingly looking to use data to help their drivers more safely navigate the roads. That's part of their value proposition as a manufacturer, that their car is going to be the safest car on the road. Well, this technology built in will help them achieve that, while also helping them provide insurance to their existing customers that's more affordable and reflects the reality that that car is safer. Eventually, we may go direct to consumer as well. So where, you know, you're receiving this information via Waze or via Google Maps or via any other mapping device. Anybody uses MapQuest anymore, but your TomTom, your Garmin, whatever it may be, that this information is given direct to consumers to help them make better choices and change their behaviors. But there's a very big market when it comes to auto and selling data into the auto industry. The auto market in aggregate is about 3% of GDP if you consider all of the players. So we have no problems finding buyers across multiple industries that really, if we are successful in selling into all of them, we'll seed systems change. We will seed really transformational safety on our roads and be able to meaningfully impact because, yeah, we can sell to city governments, but they can only do so much, right? They can only ticket or change the roads. We can sell to insurance and they can do their part to motivate behaviors, right? They can price your insurance a little bit different, maybe change your behavior. We can sell to fleets because fleets are going to be able to route more safely and you won't get hit by a UPS truck or whatever. Everybody has a stake in this and we see no problem selling our data to all of those stakeholders to actually achieve the end goal, just to get those crashes to go down.
My next thing with that is, it's fascinating, is that, and the one thing I can think of is, how real time or how much lag is there between collection of data and being able to put out throughput with AI? Because my thought process is, okay, you identify an area and you sit there and say, okay, don't go down this street. That's a bad street. Everybody reroutes themselves to a different habit. And all of a sudden that, you know, where it used to be a bad street becomes a good street because no one's there. And all of a sudden the traffic accidents are happening 3 blocks to the left or 3 blocks to the right. So my question is, how quickly does the software update to be able to sit there and show either in real time or within, you know, a week, a month, a year, how up to date is that information? So when you're trying to make those adjustments and you're trying to make those decisions, how quickly can you actually, you know, pivot when necessary?
Yeah. And I think it's important to note how quickly you need to pivot, right? Because we immediately go to the, I'm on the road and in this moment, should I turn left or should I turn right?
Right. And
that's an important decision in that second. But in reality, the conditions on whether you turn left or whether you turn right, those roads don't change all that frequently. right? If you turn left there in that minute, or you turn left there an hour later or a day later, the road itself doesn't really change at that pace. There may be traffic congestion in the moment, or there may be a pothole there that wasn't there the day before. But at a high level, unsafe roads really stay pretty unsafe
for weeks or months or years at a time, or until at least, you know, something is done about it.
Yeah. And what we see is actually monthly seasonal change, to answer your question. So okay. It looks different in April than it does in June. It looks different in June than it does in December. So we know all these fun facts about when it's really dangerous to drive. So just a few to keep your audience safer on the roads. If you're listening in your car right now, if you can avoid it the day before any holiday, that intuitively we know that, but we do see it manifest in the data 2 days before major holidays. So Thanksgiving, Christmas, you want to be avoiding 2 days prior, not just the day before.
So last minute Christmas shopping is out.
However, if you're a really, really last minute shopper, the day of the holiday turns out to be the greatest day to be on the road. Fewer drivers, you know, whatever it may be, turns out drive on the holiday if you can. The other thing that surprised me in the data is that it tends to be more dangerous to drive in the summer than the winter.
Really?
Yeah, it seems counterintuitive at first until you talk to insurance carriers, who mostly confirm that this is true. They see more claims in the summer than in the winter. The few reasons that people point to: definitely more traffic volume on the road. So summer traffic looks different than winter traffic. And people just, they tend to drive differently in the winter, stay off the roads during weather, avoid unsafe areas or slow down significantly on tight corners or steep slopes. They don't drive as aggressively in the winter. So the sort of physical road characteristics they're more mindful of. And I think also there's got to be something to do with the college kids coming home from school, that the type of driver on the road looks a little bit different as well. So there's all sorts of reasons why, but definitely some surprises in the data as well.
So when you're taking all this data to your potential customers, and I'm going to say your potential customers, how do you turn around and communicate the value in a way that really gets them to sit there and say, I get this. This makes sense. You know what? I need to buy into this, because what you're selling is above and beyond the thought process of a lot of people. It may not be in the industry, but for a lot of people, it's above and beyond. So when you're dealing with C-suite people that are looking for this one-page dashboard, the people are really writing the checks. How do you sit there and say, you know what, this is going to cost you X number of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, I have no idea, to be able to implement this, but it's going to save you millions.
Exactly. It's something you've never looked at before that we all think you probably should. Yeah, I mean, so a few bits of advice. These are things we learned. So I'm speaking from failing, falling on my face, and getting back up to try it again. So
that's the best learning we've all done.
Yeah. If others are in this journey as well of trying to figure out how to translate something that isn't at first easy to really understand into something that is, try it a million and one times until you figure it out. And it's a very circuitous path. And as more people know about your brand, it becomes easier. So the first thing I would say is we try to make it intuitive. We try to help people think about their own experience first. So I mentioned this even on the podcast. It said, think about a road in your neighborhood that's unsafe. For me, it's this. And I describe the nature of a road that I've driven on. And it's funny, because after I give speeches or presentations or sales pitches, we'll be walking out and someone will stop me and say, you know what road it is for me? And they'll share that road. So I know that it resonates with people in a way that they're able to ground it. The second thing is to make your product intuitive. I think far too many AI and machine learning, they try to create these like complex three-dimensional boxes and visualizations that are just supposed to make you feel stupid, right? That's the point. No, AI should be used and can be used. And what's so transformative about it is it takes what we know to be true, but can only process in our brains, which are really complex systems, and makes it so that we can have that information in the palm of our hands and make decisions without really having to think that deeply about, should I turn left or should I turn right? So first, try to make it relatable. Second, make sure your technology itself is intuitive. Don't try to do something that's complex for the sake of complexity. And then third, I think the thing that we're working on right now, if I was vulnerable about it, is to create a product that enables people to use it right away, right? To be able to enter their own address and see and validate that what you're doing is grounded and makes sense to them. Because that's the key. That's where folks buy in, because they not only understand your product, they understand the importance of your product, but they can start using your product and start really showing others and starting to spread the word and be your advocate for you when it comes to growing your audience. It can't just be the people that you can physically talk to. You need to convince others that it's worth talking to others about and sort of make some virality to your concept. And the way that you do that is giving people the thing they need to go out and use to show to others. And that's where we're iterating currently and trying to find the right fit for us too. So we're still learning.
And that's powerful, is to be able to put something in somebody's hand to sit there and say, look, test it on streets that you know. You know, test it in your own neighborhood. Test it in the route that you take to work every single day. If they're looking at something that's familiar, something that resonates with them, something that they know like the back of their hand, it's intuitive and they can sit there and say, oh yeah, I can see that this is right based on the data that I'm going. Compared to say, well, here's our demo from Los Angeles. Well, I've never been to Los Angeles in my life, or Delaware, or wherever, and be able to sit there going, well, I don't know if that's true or not, because I don't know the location.
I will push back on what I just said too. So here's where that goes wrong sometimes, is that when people know their neighborhood really well, and they start getting into the minutia of it, and they're like, well, but that's not like that on Tuesday. And you're like, okay, no. But so sometimes it makes sense to keep it in places that people don't know, because it also like removes some of the personal nature to it. I think, and this is where we're iterating, right? Because we've seen it go well and we've seen it fail for that reason. But just letting people play, like letting people use, letting people move around, letting people understand it, not just explain it, right? It really put themselves in the shoes of the user and use it. Because if they can't use it, they can't sell it to somebody else to use.
Well, that's how I learn. I'm a hands-on learner. If you really want to teach me something, put it in my hands and let me play with it. You know, I'm not one of these people who can read a book and learn something. I've got to make it real to myself. Until I can actually make it real in one way, shape, or form, it doesn't become ingrained into my psyche. So
yes, and it's so important, especially for data products, right? People who are selling data or machine learning, these are abstract concepts to begin with. It's like selling a nebula. Like, what is a nebula? Like, define the edges. Tell me what, how to conceptually understand its components, how to use it, how to make good use of it for your customers or for your company. That's a hard thing to figure out. And it takes time and iteration.
It does. You have been an amazing guest. So two last questions. One, the first question is, how do people get in touch with you? It's odnsure.com is the best way to get in touch with you.
So two ways, right? Odnsure is a great way. It's our website. So if you want to connect and look at information, there's actually a map of the city of Chicago on our website right now that you can scroll around, zoom, click, and do all that fun stuff. If you do want to play, be my guest. Another great way to get a hold of me is LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is where I consider that my platform of networking and connection. So not only to connect with me, but to connect to my network, because there's so many people we've met in this journey, from other startup founders to telemetry providers, industry players, thought leaders, executives, folks like yourself that have been really helpful on our journey, we connect to on LinkedIn. So I always encourage folks to ask for introductions and network through me to others as well. So connect to me, connect to others, and then definitely check out the golf course, which is, as you mentioned, a modern forum for business conversations and insurance, where we invite folks who don't typically get a platform or a place in the industry to share their experience, to explain a little bit of room to talk about what they do, because we want to make sure that the insurance industry hears new ideas like ODNs, gets to know them a little bit, welcomes them into the family, and help people make more introductions and get to know others in the industry as well. So I think, yeah, odnsure.com, LinkedIn, or the golf course, which is golf. It's literally the word golf course, but it's .se. So golfcore.se. So the word golf course.
We'll make sure it's all in the show notes. So it'll all be there, including Kariad's LinkedIn profile. So you can stalk her all you want, I give you permission, but be nice about it.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, reach out, say hello.
So the last thing I want to ask you before, and this is something I ask everybody before they walk out the door.
Okay.
When you get in your car and you drive away from a meeting and you're no longer in the room, mm-hmm. What do you want people to think about you when you're not there and ODN?
It's a great question. And I think everyone should ask this question of themselves. We're doing some strategic planning this fall, and I'm going to pose this question to my team. What do you want people to think about yourself? And what do you want people to think about your brand? And I think for me as an executive, the CEO of ODN, they sort of are one in the same. I want people to not only believe that we're super freaking smart people, right? Like, I think that that's an easy sell because
we're smart.
Yeah, we're smart. We're smart people. But I want people to believe that we're putting and manifesting our very expensive educations and our very creative brains to solve a problem that connects dots that have never been connected before. Because that to me inspires. That to me helps people feel like, man, not only are these kids just like bookish and know the math and know what they're doing, but that they see things that other people don't see. They see the future and they're dedicating their lives and their what they could be, their time, what they could be earning millions and millions of dollars for these incredible brains that we have. And instead, they are sacrificing family, friends, income, job security, family planning for a lot of women founders, for example, to delay or don't start families because they are so dedicated to their craft and what they do. I want people to believe that our vision is a vision that we're trying to see a future that leave people better off, that will powerfully make everyone in the room's lives substantively better, substantively safer. And so for me, it's that I want people to feel a part of it a little bit. I want people to feel like I might not be able to do that math. That sounds like complicated math, and it is. But I trust that these people are taking their skills and applying them in a way that's for the good. That's going to, again, make the world a better, safer place to be. I know it motivates my team to show up to work every day. What motivates us to work through the really hard math problems. And I really hope that people appreciate that, but more importantly, like support businesses like that, because AI has gotten a really bad rap from Facebook and from companies that have abused their privileges when it comes to your data. And I want people to know that there are folks out there that actually care that your data can not only be used for evil, but it can also be used for good, and who are dedicating their lives to seeing that future manifest. So I want people to feel good about that. I want people to feel excited that people like an ODN are out there and to support us, right? To tell others about what we're doing, because it is a really positive and hopefully transformational thing.
That's awesome. We are all stronger together, Kariad.
You know, really are.
The work that we do together, and we each have a singular part to play in this thing called life. Mm-hmm. And you can do things that I can do, I can't do, and I can do things that you can't do, but it doesn't really matter. Because if we all work together, we're all going to come up with some amazing things. So thank you for doing everything you do to move the world forward.
Thank you.
So thank you for all this insightful conversation, opening up my brains to new ideas. And
thank you
for being a wonderful guest.
Ben, and thank you. I mean, part of the joy of being on your podcast is that you're using your gifts to help folks like me spread the word. So the thanks and appreciation is right back at you. Thanks, Ben.
You're welcome.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?